Ian. He'd arrived home yesterday and had called this morning. I suggested we meet here, neutral territory. After 2 weeks of thinking long and hard, I still wasn't sure what I wanted from Ian. It was obvious he wanted more than friendship from me. Kristen beamed, oblivious to my inner turmoil. "Ian's on his way over," she told my dad and Nadia. Dad's eyes narrowed on me. Nadia stood, her smile covering half her face. "I guess that's our cue to leave." I was measuring counter space when Ian arrived shortly after the others had left. He shook his jacket and hair. Water rained onto the floor. "Man, it's crazy out there." He blew out a breath and grinned. "Hi, Ames." My pulse fluttered at the sight of him. He looked good, really good, in a rugged, wet dog sort of way. I motioned for his jacket. "You're drenched. Let me take that." "Thanks." He slipped it off. "I ran here from home." "Where do you live?" I asked, hanging the jacket on the back of a chair. 7 blocks that way." He pointed in the opposite direction I walk from the cafe. "We're neighbors." I laughed. "If you consider a half a mile neighbors." "How was your trip?" "Great. I got some amazing pictures." He set a wet paper bag on the table beside me, avoiding the papers I'd spread to show Nadia my ideas. Ian didn't want to get them wet. He gently nudged my shoulder. "I was right, by the way."
"About what?"
"I did miss you." My eyes widened, and he chuckled, looking around. "So, you leased Joe's old place?"
Yeah, I did," I sputtered, still stuck on the "I did miss you" revelation.
"I can't wait to see what you do with it."
He rapped his knuckles on the Formica counter.
"Have you researched espresso machines yet?"
I'd barely had time to finish my business plan since Ian had left the country. Crossing my arms, I leaned a hip against the counter edge.
"Not yet."
"Why?" He mimicked my stance and rested his hand above his heart.
"I'd be honored to recommend a brand or two."
My mouth quirked. "What makes you an expert?" I asked, genuinely interested despite the good-natured humor in his tone. Aside from photography and that he often traveled, I didn't know anything about him.
"I spent several months in Provence after I graduated college, dated a barista, and she taught me..."
His voice trailed and face flushed. I arched a brow. The corner of his mouth twitched.
"She taught me a lot."
My eyes narrowed. "I bet she did." Ian straightened.
"Ah, now, don't be jealous," he chided, and my face flamed brighter than his. "Come here, I brought you something."
Paper crinkled as he pulled a large bottle from the bag he'd brought.
"What's that?"
I asked.
"Cider."
"You brought juice."
He laughed. "Big kid juice. Hard cider. I lived off this stuff on my trip."
He patted his chest and jean pockets as though looking for something. He spied his jacket and dug into the side pockets. He retrieved 2 shot glasses.
"I've never had shots of cider before."
He rolled his eyes.
"You sip the stuff. I grabbed these because they fit in my pockets."
He popped the lid off the bottle with an opener he pulled from another pocket and poured the cider.
"Normally, we drink this at room temperature. It's so damn cold outside, it might be a little cool. Still good, though."
He handed me a glass. I sniffed the cider. Images of apple pie and tarts filled my head.
"Kia ora,"
Ian said, raising his glass between us.
"Kia what?" "It's a Maori greeting. The Maori are the indigenous people of New Zealand. Loosely translated, it means good health. I like to think it means cheers."
"Cheers," I repeated, and sipped the cider. It had a dry fruitiness. Delicious. Ian sat in the chair from where his jacket hung, and I lowered into the one across from him. He stretched his legs underneath the table and leaned back, tapping his shoes against my ankle. The slight contact ricocheted up my leg and straight to my core. He watched me intently. I shifted in my chair. "Didn't your mother teach you not to stare?" His eyes dulled momentarily before they flashed with interest. "If I didn't stare, I wouldn't be able to figure out why I find you more intriguing than before." The tanned skin crinkled at the corners of his eyes. He meant to be lighthearted, but his quandary weighed heavily. I moistened my lips and rested my forearms on the table, cupping the little glass in my fingers. "Have you ever lost someone dear to you?" I asked seriously. His expression darkened.
"Yes, I have."
Despite my reluctance to tell anyone about my interactions with Lacey, I debated how much to tell Ian about James. I'd buried my fiancé and still mourned him. I missed him something fierce, and that longing only fueled the seeds of doubt Lacey had planted. Until those went away, it wouldn't be fair to let Ian assume I wanted anything more than his friendship. "When we first met," I began, thinking carefully about what I was about to say. I didn't want Ian's pity, but I needed him to understand my frame of mind. "You asked if I was engaged." "I was, for almost a year. My fiancé died last May. Actually, he went missing when he fell overboard while fishing in Mexico. His body was eventually recovered and I buried him on our wedding day. That was in July." I drank the rest of my cider in one gulp and wiped my mouth with the back of my hand. "Yes, I am doing cider shots," I remarked wryly. Ian gaped, his body frozen. After a moment, he shook his head as though shaking off the shock.
"Shit, Amy. I'm sorry."
He grasped both my hands. His thumb brushed back and forth over my knuckles. "I never saw his body. I never had a chance to say goodbye." Ian murmured something incoherent. He tightened his grip. Had the table not been between us, I knew he would have pulled me against his chest and held me close within the protective band of his arms. I studied our linked fingers. His hands were warm, strong, the movement of his thumbs soothing. A deep ache for companionship burned within my chest, the heat spreading outward through my limbs. I lifted my gaze to his and saw something encouraging behind his eyes. My crazy, upended world shifted into place with a resounding click. "I can tell you're going to be a good friend, Ian." He made a noise in the back of his throat.
"A friend, am I?"
Disappointment clouded his expression. "I'm sorry, it's just..." I extracted my hands and dropped them onto my lap. "I've never been with anyone else. It's always been James and me."
"James, oh," his mouth circled, "your fiancé."
He propped his elbow on the table and rubbed his cheek, scratching at the stubble shadowing his jaw.
"Are you nervous about being with someone else?" he asked quietly.
"No, not nervous." Ian arched a brow. "Okay, maybe a little. I'm not ready for a serious relationship, not yet. I had the cafe to think about, and James. His body had been underground less than a year, if there was a body underground, and that was the crux of it. The not knowing made it difficult to let go of what we once had together. My parents think I was too dependent on James, I admitted, more as an afterthought. Ian snorted. He waved his arm to encompass the diner.
What you want to do to this place isn't the sign of a dependent woman. More like someone determined to make something of her life.
A tentative smile tugged at my lips. He refilled my shot glass and raised his.
I'll make you a deal. I'll toast to us becoming great friends if you promise to tell me when you want something more with me.
My eyes rounded. Then I tossed back my head, laughing at his deliberate word choice. When, not if.
You're something else, I teased.
He shook his head.
Nah, just optimistic.
All right, I lifted my glass. You've got yourself a deal.
Chapter 12.
The summer before I started high school, I had known James for 6 years and no longer wanted to be his friend. I itched for something more. My thinking wasn't a sudden change of direction, more a subtle shift over the last school year. Like a butterfly ever so slowly unfolding her wings upon emerging from a cocoon and taking flight. I started to notice things about him I hadn't before, like his scent. He didn't have that sweaty locker room smell the boys at my school had. His cologne meshed nicely with his own scent, making my insides cartwheel whenever he stood near and I breathed him in. What a head rush! It left me dizzy and confused, and on more than one occasion I had to stop from plastering my nose into his chest. He would laugh and push me away. But despite my potential embarrassment, I knew him better than anyone else. His endless pursuit to improve his artwork, his frustrations with his parents forcing him on a career path he didn't want, and his despondency over not sharing his work with anyone outside my family, else his family find out and they prevent him from seeing me, made for a heady combination in my head. I was falling in love with my best friend, and I desperately missed him. Football practice had started, and he had a menu of other activities keeping him busy. I hadn't seen him much that summer, but he did make a surprise visit one August afternoon. I was baking cookies for Kristen's birthday and had just removed the cookie sheet from the oven. When I straightened and turned around, I found James leaning against the kitchen threshold, watching me. He was wearing slate pants and a white dress shirt unbuttoned at the collar, an outfit suitable for church on Sundays, not a hot, dry Thursday, and definitely not for football. At 16, James didn't have the lean, gangly stature typical of guys his age. Years of football had kept him in top shape. Unruly, sun-burnished strands tumbled on his dark head. He'd been running his hands through his hair. Something was on his mind. "What are you doing here?" I asked, surprised to find him standing in my house. I shouldn't be. He had a key, thanks to Dad, who'd grown weary answering the door every time James came over, which, before this summer, had been a lot. "Don't you have football practice?" He shrugged. "I decided to take the afternoon off." My brows lurched up. "And your parents are cool with that?" He snorted, his forehead crinkling as he tilted his chin, giving me a wide-eyed look. His parents had no idea he was here. "Dad's working late and Mom's at a charity function," he explained. "So you're playing hooky?" I set the cookie sheet on the granite counter. He gave me a brilliant, face-splitting grin that made my heart clutch. My cheeks flushed. I ducked my head to hide the blush as I busied transferring cookies to the cooling rack. "Are you here to paint?" I asked when I heard him approach. "And to see you." I couldn't stop the wide smile that spread across my face. He leaned a hip against the counter and snatched a cookie. I grabbed his wrist. The cookie hovered an inch from his mouth. He cocked a brow. My eyes narrowed. "Those are for Kristen. It's her birthday." He popped the cookie into his mouth. "James," I complained. My gaze dipped to his lips, and my thoughts changed to a new channel. How many girls had he kissed with those lips? Did he ever think about kissing me? My face scorched. He smirked. I gave him an exasperated look and let go of his wrist, returning to my task. "No more," I warned. He would consume the entire batch, no thanks to his football appetite, if given the chance. "I don't have time to bake more." "One more?" He pushed out his lower lip in a pout. "Fine," I said, finding him irresistible. I shoved a cookie in his mouth. He grunted. I nodded at his clothes. "Why are you dressed like that?" "What's wrong with how I'm dressed?" He gave me an appalled look. "Nothing," I gasped. "You look nice. I mean, your clothes are nice, that's all," I sputtered. He had to be dressed up for a reason. "So, where are you going?" "You mean, where have I been?" He lowered his face and took in his outfit as though he'd forgotten what he wore. His expression twisted.
It's Mon's latest scheme to prepare us for a life of board meetings and dinner parties, he groused.
I swiped my hands together, brushing off crumbs. What's she got you and Thomas doing now?
His lips twitched. You look cute in that apron.
He tugged the ruffled edge. Where'd you get it?
You're avoiding the question and distracting me. I pushed his hand away.
So are you.
He snagged my hand and wove our fingers together. I inhaled sharply. Both our heads dropped to our clasped hands, then quickly rose. We locked gazes. Surprise brightened his brown eyes before a devilish smile spread across his jaw. He lifted our hands, arms bent at the elbow. His free arm looped my waist and tugged me against his chest. I gasped at the sudden contact. I'd never been this close this way with him before.
What are you doing?
Showing you.
Showing me what?
I squeaked, my voice shooting to the ceiling. James chuckled. I'm showing you what I've been up to. Follow my lead. Listen to my count. He murmured by my ear. He pushed into my chest, forcing me back. I stumbled and his hold tightened. He rested his chin on my head. My entire body went rigid. I felt him smile into my hair. You're so tense. It's just me.
Just James.
Holding me, I could feel the heat of his skin through my tank top and grimaced. That observation didn't help my naive, overactive imagination in the least, though I did notice his heart was pounding just as fast as mine. We started moving, and he began to count, a whisper in my ear. After a few stumbling missteps and several bruised toes, he moved us smoothly around the kitchen. We were dancing. And not the jump-up-and-down kind we did at the middle school socials, but the fancy grown-up kind.
You're taking dance lessons.
He hummed in acknowledgement. I felt the vibration to my toes. We're dancing the waltz. I leaned back and looked up at him while trying to focus on the footwork. What does waltzing have to do with meetings and parties? He gave me a disgruntled look. Negotiations. Apparently Mom wants Thomas and me sharp and quick, no matter where we close a deal. I imagined James in a business suit, dancing with a beautiful woman in a silk blouse and pencil skirt. You dance while you work? I had no idea that was what people did when they got jobs. He threw his head back and laughed. No, you crazy girl. My crazy girl. He murmured into my hair and kissed my head, sending sparks of excitement through me. He called me his girl. Dad attends a lot of after-hour parties and has closed some big deals at them. His parents' careers with Donato Enterprises were so different from my parents' work at the restaurant. I pictured their glamorous life, long gowns and men in tuxedos sipping champagne from cut crystal, while a 20-piece orchestra played in the background. James twirled us around the kitchen island, bringing me back to the smell of baked chocolate chip cookies and his closer-than-ever nearness. You're very good at this. Like he was good at everything else he tried, from running precision plays on the football field to his self-taught painting techniques. His acrylic canvases were stunning. You make me look good, he complimented, adding, and you're a fast learner. His breath ruffled my hair. We were dancing a hairbreadth from each other, prompting a thought to slip into my head as smoothly as he moved us in 1-2-3-step circles. Do you dance this closely with the girls in your class? I whispered. James remained quiet for a long moment. I dipped my chin, feeling stupid and embarrassed for asking, but the thought of him holding other girls this way made me ill. When did I become so jealous of who and where he spent his time? Since he confided I was his best friend in the world. Since he held me while I cried after Roxanne Livingston stole my underwear in gym class and flung it like a slingshot to the ceiling, where it snagged on the fire sprinkler and was left for the entire school to see. James had wanted to beat the shit out of Roxanne, and I had wanted him for myself for longer than I cared to admit. No, James finally said, not like this. It's different with you. My head snapped up. His expression sobered. I've wanted to dance with you since I first started lessons.
He had?
James slowed our tempo so we swayed side to side, and then we stopped moving altogether.
There's something else I've wanted to do.
What's that?
Kiss you.
And then he did. My eyes rounded. I squeezed his upper arm. Our lips touched once, twice, and again. His tongue traced the seam of my mouth, and I gasped. He dipped inside. Then he was gone before I had a chance to wrap my head around the fact James was kissing me. My James! I gawked at him. He gave me a shy smile.
Hi.
I blinked. Hi. He cocked his head, his expression turning wary.
You okay?
Yeah, I think so.
You think so?
He laughed, sounding nervous. I touched my tongue to my lips. They throbbed. Everything throbbed. New, glorious, and spectacular sensations. I felt like a butterfly taking her first flight.
Why did you kiss me? I blurted.
You don't know? He asked, and I shook my head. He'd mentioned I was his best friend, but that was it. Just a friend.
You're my best friend, Amy, he said, echoing my thoughts.
My shoulders sagged in disappointment, and he curved a finger under my chin, tilting up my face.
Actually, you're more than that to me.
His voice lowered, sounding shy.
I've told you before, you know me better than anyone. I've really grown to care about you.
My lips formed a small circle.
Oh,
I breathed. His face split into a grin that glowed brighter than the August sun. He bear-hugged me, lifting me off my feet.
God, I'm glad we're at the same school again. We'll get to see each other more.
Like we don't see each other enough already? I teased.
We haven't seen each other enough this summer.
He lowered me to my feet, but didn't let go.
Hey, you can slip me notes again in between classes.
I turned crimson.
I liked your notes. I've missed them.
I smiled shyly.
Then I'll be sure to write you more.
James released me and popped another cookie in his mouth.
Hey, stop eating Kristen's cookies.
Stop making them taste so good. He grabbed my face, cupping my cheeks. I sucked in a breath, the move catching me off guard. He stared at me as if he were in awe.
God, your eyes are beautiful this close up, so blue, like the Caribbean Sea. Can I kiss you again?
Yes, please, I breathed. This was all so new, and I was hungry for more. The butterfly in my stomach flapped her wings, ready for another flight. James grinned, and I grinned back, and then we were both laughing and kissing.
You're sure you're okay to be here? I asked after a few moments, thinking how upset his parents would be when they learned James ditched football practice.
Don't worry about me. They'll never know. I'll get home before them. He kissed my nose to appease me. The house phone rang, and I jumped away from James. He laughed.
It's the phone, Amy, not your parents walking in on us.
Ha ha, I smarted, my cheeks turning brighter than an oven heat coil. I answered the phone, watching James roll up his sleeves and empty his pockets onto the counter. Wallet, a receipt, change, and keys to the BMW 323ci his parents had bought for his 16th birthday. He wandered into the sunroom, where his art studio was set up in the corner. I listened to Thomas on the other end of the line, looking for James. As Thomas spoke, my smile fell, and when he finished, I hung up the phone, noticing James had been watching me. He frowned.
You okay?
You have to go. Your mom's on her way home, Phil's with her.
James swore.
He didn't get along with his cousin. Once he had caught Phil snooping through his desk. I knew James kept all the trinkets and cards I'd given him in the bottom drawer. He also kept the notes and letters I'd written him, too. Had Phil read them? James wasn't sure, but he did remark that a picture of us was missing. James and I were eating popsicles, his arm casually draped across my shoulders.
I was 12 and wearing my first bikini, which I'd cajoled Mom into buying on the condition Dad would never see me wearing it. The sight of his little girl in a scrap of material would be too much for him. So when Kristen's mom gave me the picture for my scrapbook, I gave it to James. I didn't want Dad to find the photo, which didn't seem as big a deal now that I worried Phil had taken it. James glanced around the kitchen, rubbing his forearms, thinking, "I should go." "James, your dad..." He rolled his eyes my way.
"What about him?"
"He's home, and he's asking for you." All the color drained from his face.
"James, gotta run. I'll call you later."
He grabbed his keys off the counter and bolted for the door. "James, your wallet!" The front door slammed. I grabbed the wallet, which had his driver's license. He would need it on him if he planned driving anywhere besides the 2 blocks home. I raced out the front door in time to catch his BMW turning the corner. I sprinted to his house, hoping to reach him before he went inside. I caught him on the walkway to his porch.
"James,"
I huffed. He whirled, eyes rounding as I came to a full stop on the sidewalk by his car. I bent over, hands on knees, and sucked in air. Lifting my head, I held out my arm.
"Your wallet."
He blinked, his hands automatically going to his back pockets and finding them empty. He approached and took the wallet.
"Thanks,"
he said, his gaze tracking a car behind me. I looked over my shoulder to see Mrs. Donato pulling into the driveway. Phil sat in the passenger seat, his eyes on me.
"Go home, Amy,"
James ordered. I turned back around. Edgar Donato stood on the porch, mouth pressed in a flat line. He held the door open, waiting for James. James glanced over his shoulder.
"Go home,"
he said again. There was an edge to his tone.
"Please,"
he added when I didn't move. My gaze jumped from him to Edgar and back. His expression softened. He cupped my face, brushed his thumb along my cheekbone.
"I'll be fine. Go home. I'll call you tonight."
"Okay." I watched him move into the house, pride keeping his shoulders back and spine straight. Edgar gave me a cursory glance and followed James into the house, yanking his leather belt from his pants. I gasped, recalling James's story about Thomas's welts. "Oh, James."
"Hey, Amy."
I jolted, looking anxiously up at Phil, who stood one sidewalk line away from me. He grinned.
"Long time no see."
My anxiety, which I attributed more to James's predicament than Phil's unexpected appearance by my side, eased with his smile. He'd changed since we'd met 5 years ago. I found it extraordinary we hadn't seen each other since, considering how frequently he visited his aunt. Phil's stature was still leaner and taller than either James or Thomas, and the tailored pants and shirt he wore added years to his 19. He looked refined and turgid. He was so much older than me, and so out of my league. I didn't understand the world the Donatos lived in, one with expensive clothes and cars, dinner parties and social functions, a lifestyle people like me saw only on TV. It was intimidating. Phil was intimidating. I glanced at the house, twisting my fingers.
"Will James be okay?"
Phil shrugged.
"Edgar seemed angry. What did James do?"
"He bailed on football practice." As soon as the words left me, my stomach pitched. This wasn't any of Phil's business. He chuckled.
"So, the golden boy isn't so golden after all."
He lifted his arm toward my house.
"Walk you home?"
Okay, I heard myself agree. We walked at a slow pace, nothing near my leg-pumping sprint a few moments ago. My breathing was still erratic, and sweat dripped from my hairline and down my neck. I tugged my shirt, fanning my chest. From the corner of my eye, I noticed Phil's gaze track my movements. I stopped messing with my shirt, suddenly self-conscious of the small breasts that had finally made an appearance this past year.
"You've grown since I last saw you,"
Phil remarked. My cheeks flushed and damp from running, scorched. I dipped my head and my eyes widened. I still wore the frilly apron from baking cookies. I yanked it off.
"You look cute. It suits you."
I crumpled the apron into a ball and crossed my arms, hiding the offending article and my breasts.
How long are you visiting?
I asked, steering the conversation from Phil's blatant inspection of me. I picked up my pace, wanting to get home.
Not long, a few days.
So your dad's traveling again? His mouth quirked on one side. He was laughing at me. He didn't need a caregiver while his dad was away, not like when I'd first met him. He was a college student. Sheesh, what a stupid question.
Phil's expression turned serious, verging on worried. Was he thinking about James?
I was worried, too. I couldn't get rid of the image of Mr. Donato removing his leather belt, anger reddening the cheeks that spilled over a too-tight shirt collar. He'd put on a good deal of weight the past couple of years.
James will be okay, right? I asked again, needing the reassurance. Mr. Donato looked really intense.
James will be fine. Edgar's stressed, that's all.
And he wanted to take it out on James? I gave Phil a panicked look. He scratched his chin.
Look, Amy, my dad's sick. Edgar's had to take charge of Donato Enterprises until I'm old enough to take over. I still have 2 years of college.
Two things struck me about his explanation. James hadn't been the person on his mind, and his dad was dying.
Boy, how selfish could I be? James's kiss and his impending punishment had me rattled.
I'm sorry about your dad. That's nice he's giving you the company, though. You don't have to find a job or anything once you graduate.
That's the idea. Dad told me a long time ago when I was a little kid he'd want me to take over one day.
He stopped. We'd arrived at my house. Thanks for the walk, I said.
Anytime.
I gave him a short wave, walking backward toward the porch.
And thank you, he added, about my dad. That means a lot.
Hey, he called when I reached the door.
Does James still paint at your house?
My hand froze on the doorknob. How did he know James painted? Phil had given me the idea to keep James's supplies, but I'd never told him. James wouldn't have either. Outside of my parents, Kristen and Nick were the only two who knew about James's studio in our sunroom, and neither of them would have risked telling Thomas or Phil, else James's parents find out. Then I recalled my notes in James's desk. More than once I'd written to James, asking if he planned to come over after school and paint, slipping my questions to him as we passed in the hallway at middle school. Phil must have read the notes. My heart sank into my stomach, and my expression must have given away the answer because Phil's face split into a large, I-know-your-secret grin. I felt the blood rush to my toes.
Phil shook his head. Don't worry, James's secret is safe with me, but I would love to see his work.
He started walking toward me. I swallowed. My hand twisted the knob, and the front door cracked open. I can't invite strangers into the house when my parents aren't home.
But I'm not a stranger. In fact,
he stopped at the porch step.
If things don't work out with James, I'd love to take you out.
I balked. Was he serious? Phil was so much older.
I'm sorry, I can't have anyone inside. Bye, Phil.
I slipped into the house. I wanted to put the door between us as quickly as possible.
Think about it, Amy. I've thought about you a lot over the years. It would be fun.
He saluted, touching the tips of two fingers to his lips and waving them in my direction before he disappeared from my line of sight. The front door had closed. I flipped the lock and turned around, sinking to the floor, my back against the door. I covered my face with my hands.
Ew. Phil had asked me out. He knew about James's paintings, and it was my fault. I never should have mentioned anything in the notes. Then again, James shouldn't have kept them. But that was James, and I couldn't blame him. He was sentimental, a gifted artist with a caring soul. It would be another 2 years before I saw Phil again, and only sparingly thereafter, such as during the Sunday dinners Claire and Edgar hosted. Phil joined us every so often. Thankfully, he never asked about James's artwork again. As for James, our kiss that day was only the beginning. With it, we'd crossed the bridge from friendship to a deeper relationship that grew more intimate with the passage of time.
James never confessed his father punished him with the belt, though he did hiss and shift out of reach when my hand accidentally brushed over his lower back. He blamed it on a pulled muscle from football practice, so I didn't ask if that was really the cause of his pain. I didn't want to make him any more uncomfortable than he already felt. I could tell he was ashamed he'd disobeyed his father. He made a point to never miss another football practice for the rest of high school. Chapter 13, July. 1 year after James's funeral, Amy's was ready to open for business. Looking back, I never imagined coming this far or accomplishing so much. I never fathomed the life of a single independent business owner would be my life. Then again, I'd never imagined a life without James. But I had done it, and was surprisingly happy and pleased, despite the chaos of construction and doubts. Doubts about my abilities and my doubts surrounding James's death. I kept those thoughts to myself, bottled up and sealed tight. Other than a Mexican resort's business card, I still didn't have proof to fully convince myself James was alive. I just needed to figure out a way to start looking without my parents, Thomas, and friends thinking I was losing my mind, that I believed what a psychic told me despite witnessing James's burial. There were times I thought I was going crazy, like having hallucinations in a public bathroom. The last 9 months had gone by in a whirl of activity. My parents often visited to check on the progress at Amy's. Ian frequently stopped by too, taking breaks from editing photos. He would double-check the construction, claiming he wanted to make sure the subs weren't taking advantage of me, cutting corners and skimping on quality work. I told him that was what I had Nadia for. No one messed with her. But I knew Ian used it as an excuse to spend time with me, so I let him inspect the work. I liked having him around. When July arrived, employees had been hired and trained, and supplies stocked on shelves. The pungent odors of paint and plaster dissipated, replaced with the robust, nutty scents of coffees and pastries. Everything was in place. It was a late Saturday afternoon, the day before Amy's soft launch where family and friends would test the menu and my staff could practice their training. So far, there hadn't been any major glitches to push out next week's grand opening. Well, until now. Gina, my shift manager and lead barista, quit. A friend had invited her to share a flat in London. She was leaving tomorrow morning. Less than 24 hours before the soft launch, and I had no experienced baristas. Ryan and Jilly had been trained by Gina. I paced the length of the counter. Amy's was a custom-order coffee house. I might be able to swing tomorrow without a lead barista, but before the official opening, I needed someone who understood how to mix beans, syrups, and spices. I needed someone who understood the equipment and its quirks. What if something went wrong? The bell over the door jingled, and Ian walked inside. Ian! Saved by the bell, literally. I rushed over. I need your help. He gripped my shoulders. What's wrong? Are you hurt? His eyes drifted over my length. Gina just quit, I explained, adding, tomorrow's the soft launch. As if he didn't already know. A cocky grin stretched across his jaw.
You do need my help. Blending coffee, I presume.
Stop looking so smug. He crossed his arms and I huffed. Yes, Ian, I need your help. Now is the time you can demonstrate your brilliance behind the coffee bar.
Ye of little faith.
He moved to the espresso machine as if he owned the place, and I rolled my eyes. His gaze roamed over the rows of bean canisters, syrups, and coffee mugs. Ian had spent a lot of time at my house since we met. We watched movies or just talked. I experimented with new recipes, stews, tarts, breads, and he taste-tested. On one occasion, I found him flipping through my binder of blended drink recipes. I'd teased he didn't have to feign interest. The next day, he showed up with several coffee recipes of his own, and I added them to my selection after I'd mocked his amateur palate. When I'd mixed them, they were damn good. He gave me a challenging look over the machine.
Did you forget our deal?
I grimaced, recalling our discussion on the first day we met.
Judging by the recipes he added to my binder, there was an excellent chance Ian could brew better coffee. Time for me to eat crow. No, I haven't forgotten. My eyes narrowed. He was so going to lose. All right, you're on, but I want you to make this specialty blend. Leaning over the counter, I retrieved my binder and flipped to the Panji hazelnut latte, named after a region in India where the hazelnut was produced. It was the most difficult recipe and called for a unique blend of imported beans and spices. Gina had a tough time replicating the drink. If the spices were slightly off, it wouldn't produce the same exquisite flavor. Ian read the directions. He rubbed his hands together. Watch and learn, sweetheart. I snorted and propped a hip against the counter ledge. He moved about the station, selecting and grinding beans, then extracting the espresso. A dark, rich liquid dripped into the mug he had preheated. I breathed in the heady aroma, and my anxiety eased. Ian steamed milk and poured it into the espresso with a wiggle motion. He grinned and handed me the mug. On the surface was a heart shaped in cream, an exact replica of the heart-shaped steam above the coffee mug in Amy's logo. You can do coffee art, I murmured. I think I'm in love. His eyes flashed. Taste it. I lifted the cup to my nose. Hazelnut, cinnamon, and something else. You changed the recipe. Drink before you judge. I did, and my insides turned to warm jelly. Ginger, and he looked at me expectantly. Cardamom. He nodded. This is good. I took another sip. Really, really good. Oh my, this is sinful. I drank some more. You're hired. Excellent. When do I start? I looked at him, trying to figure out if he was serious. He folded the towel and moved around the counter. You need a shift manager who knows what the hell he's doing, and I need a job. What about your photography? I still plan to travel and show my work. It's not about the money. I like to keep busy between trips. Why do you think I putz around here all day? You're bored? I asked, deflated. I thought it was because you liked hanging out with me. He ran a finger down my cheek. Don't look so dejected. I do like hanging out with you. A lot. My skin heated from my forehead to chest. He smiled. I don't plan to take any extended trips for a while. For now, just short excursions, a few days here or there. I'll train the staff to step in when I'm gone. What do you say? He held out his hand. What do I say? His offer was life-saving, and I get to see him every day. Not that I hadn't already seen him almost every day since we met. I clasped his hand. We have a deal. Let me grab the employment paperwork. I'll be right back. While Ian completed the forms, I finished hanging James's paintings, what I'd been doing before Gina's call. Where there had once been 8 large boxes of canvases in my garage, I had only 12 paintings left to display, not counting the ones hanging on my walls at home. Thomas's warehouse manager had never located James's artwork. The police couldn't do much either. I'd filed a report months after I realized they were missing, and I wasn't entirely convinced they'd been stolen. No evidence of forced entry, no fingerprints when the police had dusted, and nothing else in the garage was gone. Ian crossed the room and held the ladder. I haven't seen these. They're amazing. I climbed down after I'd hung the painting. They were in the garage. I had more, but I can't find them. Did they disappear into thin air? He spread his fingers wide and mouthed, poof. Pretty much. I've looked for them. Filed a police report, too. Ian studied me. Sorry about that. He was very talented. Yes, he was. I motioned toward the adjoining wall. It waits patiently for your masterpieces. Are you home tonight? He asked, adding when I nodded. I'll bring some over.
You can pick the ones you want, and I'll hang them first thing in the morning.
Only if you promise not to speak French when you do.
Ian arrived a little before 8, right after I'd finished icing a lemon blueberry cake. He stood on the porch dressed in jeans and a black shirt. He gave me a lopsided grin. I opened the door wider and he lugged inside a large, flat canvas carrier.
I have more in the car. Where can I put this one?
I pointed at the dining table and he gently laid the bag on the surface, unzipping the carrier.
I have 3 here. 2 you can display. I'll give you a percentage if they sell. The other photo is yours.
Mine? I moved to stand behind him. He removed the largest frame from the carrier and faced me.
Belize sunrise.
I gaped, my eyes flying to his.
For you, he offered.
Ian. My mouth worked. I thought you sold it.
He shook his head. I took it off the market for you. It's a gift.
He'd been holding on to it for almost a year, waiting for the right moment to give it to me. My stomach churned. I twisted James's ring before touching the wood frame finished to look like weathered boards from a pier. I thought of the price tag. I can't take this. He glanced at the walls covered with James's paintings.
If there's no room here, display it at the cafe.
Oh no, that's not why. It's too expensive. But my fingers itched to take the print from his hand. He wiggled the frame.
You know you want it.
Yeah, I do. And it meant a lot to Ian for me to have it. I couldn't deny him the satisfaction. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
He leaned the photo against a chair. I was thinking about this picture when I selected the cafe's color palette. I admitted. He seemed surprised, and I touched his arm. I love your work. A dark intensity filled his eyes. His jaw tightened.
Thank you.
A strange desire rose in me, and I yanked my gaze away. Do you want a beer? My voice sounded strained, high-pitched. Ian took a breath, propped his hands on his hips.
Yeah.
I grabbed 2 bottles from the fridge and popped the tops, handing one to Ian. I watched his throat ripple with each gulp, and I involuntarily swallowed. His nostrils flared.
What do I smell?
His eyes narrowed on the countertop.
Is that cake?
Lemon blueberry cake. He gave me a devilish grin.
Need a taste tester?
I scrunched my face. Beer and cake?
Sure, why not?
He said, searching the kitchen drawers.
Jackpot.
He found the cake cutter. I retrieved 2 plates from the cabinet as he sliced into the cake. Fruit filling oozed from the center.
What's in here?
Blueberries. I made it with fresh berries, not the canned stuff. He groaned, adding a slice to the plate nearest him. The cream cheese frosting is made with lemon curd, juice, and zest. Try some. Without thinking, I drew a finger through the frosting and held it to his mouth. Ian's eyes flared a split second before his lips closed around the tip. I felt his tongue lick away the frosting and electricity zinged to my core. My eyes widened. Oh, God. That felt entirely too good. I pulled my finger from his lip seal. A low pop resounded through the kitchen and Ian chuckled, a deep, sexy rumble. My cheeks flamed, but not nearly as hot as the current blazing deep inside me. He watched me, assessing my reaction. Slowly, he took a bite of blueberry-soaked cake. Again, the ripple of his throat caught my attention and my own throat went dry.
You have a winner,
he murmured, licking frosting from his lip. Ian was standing entirely too close. I locked my knees to keep from falling against him. I often wondered what it would feel like wrapped in his embrace, his tongue flicking mine the way it had the frosting on my fingertip. I knew it would feel different from anything I'd felt with anyone before. He'd feel different from James. Maybe even better. But Ian was a friend. And I'd made it clear from the beginning that was all he was to me, despite my attraction toward him. I blinked and turned away.
So, what else did you bring?
He set down his plate and extracted two more framed photos from the case, leaning them against the back of the couch. Misty Morning, a photo of an aspen grove he told me he'd taken in the Sierra Nevada, and Twilight Sands, the Dubai picture. I smiled deviously. Ian looked at me warily.
What?
You promised me a story. What is it about this picture? He grimaced.
I hate camels.
That's all? He crossed his arms. They hate me too. Well, that one did. He pointed at the last camel in line. Ian retrieved his beer and sank onto the couch, patting the cushion beside him. I sat down, tucking my legs underneath. He stretched his arm along the couch back.
Riding animals isn't my favorite.
Ah, yes, the mules in Peru.
That's right.
He drank his beer. It was a long ride trying to find the perfect dune for the shot. Every dune we passed before the one in the photo, that beast tossed me. The steeper the incline, the better for him, because I would roll down, then have to climb back up. I was a walking sandbag by the end of the day. The stuff was in my hair, clothes, and... He grinned around the mouth of his bottle.
You get the idea.
My camera equipment didn't fare so well either.
Oh, dear.
I'll say, it was an expensive trip. Won't be doing that again anytime soon.
And the aspens? He put his half-full bottle on the table and faced me.
Another story for another day.
His gaze dropped to my lips and my skin tightened. The room quieted, except for the hum of the air conditioner, the occasional passing car outside, and our mingled breaths. The electricity I'd felt between us earlier in the kitchen returned, charging the space between us. It acted like a magnet, pulling us toward each other. He slowly, almost cautiously, leaned toward me. My eyelids drifted closed and lips parted.
Don't, I whispered, when his lips hovered above mine.
He stilled, but didn't pull away.
I really like you, Ian, I heard myself admit. A low laugh rumbled in his throat. I could feel his smile in the subtle disturbance of the air between us.
That's a good thing, he murmured.
I'm really attracted to you, too. I moistened my lips, but...
But...
He prompted when I hesitated. Nerves danced up my back. I swallowed. When I didn't say anything, he leaned away. His brow pulled in and he slowly rubbed his bottom lip. I set my beer beside Ian's and went over to the fireplace, standing underneath the engagement portrait. I needed the distance between us to say what I had to say. I want you to know that I... My face heated with a deep blush. I swallowed. I want you. I feel this thing happening between us. His fingers stilled on his lip. His eyes flared. I shook my head, stopping him when he reached for me. No, don't. Hear me out. I can't act on it. Actually, I won't. Not while... I hesitated and inhaled deeply, collecting my courage. Ian had become just as good a friend as Nadia and Kristen, with the potential to be so much more. I trusted him, and found it very easy to talk with him about almost everything. Everything except my doubts about James's death. Ian knew how long James and I had dated, and how difficult it was for me to suddenly find myself alone. Every dream and plan of ours had shattered in an instant, like a windshield in a car accident, unstoppable and explosive. As I picked up the pieces, Ian had laughed with me over some of the stories I shared about my years with James. On other occasions, he gave me the wide, solid expanse of his chest to cry on. If anyone deserved to know the truth about what plagued me, it was Ian. If you learned someone you'd lost was still alive, but you had no idea where they were, what would you do? The lines on his face deepened. He sharply inhaled, pausing before he answered.
I'd search every corner of the earth.
I pressed my lips flat and nodded tightly. Maybe that was what I needed to do,
and I'd start with Puerto Escondido, Mexico.
Ian cocked his head, regarding me.
What's going on?
I have reason to believe James is still alive, I blurted.
Ian's eyebrows shot to the ceiling. He gave his head a slight shake.
What?
I think James is still alive, I whispered.
How? Why? He sputtered. Didn't you bury him?
I nodded. But I never saw his body.
That doesn't mean...
He stopped and rubbed his face with both hands. Leaning forward, he propped his elbows on his knees.
Why do you think he's...
He circled his hand in the air, unable to say the words.
Why do I think he's alive? I asked him, twisting my engagement ring.
It's a pretty far-fetched story.
You don't think I'll believe you. That's why you haven't told me.
I nodded.
Have you told anyone?
I shook my head, spinning the ring faster. We watched each other for a tense moment until he sighed deeply and reached an arm toward me.
Come here. Tell me everything.
I clasped his fingers and let him pull me down onto the couch. He didn't release my hand, resting our linked fingers on his thigh as we faced each other. He stretched his other arm across the couch back. Before I lost the nerve, I told him about the psychic at James's funeral, about how I'd driven to her house and dropped my wallet in the street in my rush to leave, and I told him how she'd slipped the business card to Casa del Sol in my wallet when she returned it.
You think James is living at that hotel?
I lifted a shoulder. I honestly don't know what to think. But I explained to him when I considered Lacey's warnings, the strange visions in the nightclub restroom, how James's paintings were missing, plus the fact I hadn't seen the body Thomas alleged he retrieved from Mexico. Questions surfaced. While I wanted Ian to understand why he couldn't be anything more than a friend to me until I erased my doubts, part of me needed his reassurance those doubts were warranted. Ian was quiet for several breaths, and I shifted uneasily.
You think I'm crazy for believing that psychic?
Do you believe her?
Look, Amy, he started before I could answer him, inching closer to me on the couch, our knees pressed together.
I don't think it's too far-fetched to believe what a stranger tells you over those you trust, especially when you're vulnerable and grieving. That's being human.
Here, I have a story to share. He settled farther back into the couch and tucked me closer into his side. During my travels, I see some weird shit. Stuff I have trouble believing to this day. There are things out there we can't explain. I still can't figure out how the psychic my dad hired found me.
Really? What happened?
He played with the hair draping my shoulder.
My mother wasn't quite right up here.
He tapped his index against my temple. She'd disappear for long periods. Dad wasn't around much either. But once, when I was 9, back when we were living in Idaho, I was the one who disappeared. I'd been missing for 5 days before Dad found me. The police weren't getting anywhere, so he'd hired a psychic to help. She told me magic showed her where I'd been hiding. I'll never forget what she looked like. Blonde hair so long and fair it was almost white. She had the strangest colored eyes, too. I thought she was an angel.
An angel? I repeated. Fair and ethereal, like Lacey.
My neck prickled.
Oh.
Ian shook his head and looked askance at me, the corner of his mouth lifted into a half smile.
I've never told anyone this before.
I was glad he had told me. It made me feel better about mine, less crazy. He brushed the back of his hand along my cheek, and his gaze stole to the engagement portrait.
You and James were together for a long time. I get how letting go of him must be hard for you. Just promise me you're not using the psychic as an excuse to keep yourself from falling in love again.
His gaze bore into me.
Because I've already fallen for you.
Chapter 14 Ian was waiting at the cafe's entrance when I arrived at 5 the next morning. He arranged his pictures on the wall, and I admired his work. Pleased I'd been right. Belize sunrise fit perfectly with the cafe's decor. He climbed down the ladder.
Why are you grinning?
I knew your picture would look good here. He tossed the